Judiciary on Crime, February the 16th, 1988, Hearing Room 357.
The February 16th, 1989 meeting of the Crime and Corrections Subcommittee of Judiciary will come to order. At the top of our dance card today, our House Bill 2589. House Bill 2495 and House Bill 2430. Why don't we start with 2495 and ask Representative Dix and Miller to testify on this bill. I think those are the only people we have. Bill.
Strange bedfellow.
The committee will find its comments on this bill.
Okay.
Representative Dix.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing the bill. My name is David Dix. I'm a state representative from District 41. I've introduced House Bill 2495 after being contacted by one of my constituents and that person explaining to me their experience with respect to a member of their family. And in this case, the member of the family was involved with one of the local establishments that has nude dancing in Eugene. A couple of months ago, this constituent was informed by his wife that his 18-year-old stepdaughter was dancing nude at a local strip bar. He was under the impression, as was I when I was contacted, that it was illegal for anyone to be in a bar that was under 21 and decided he would go out for himself and check it out. His wife was concerned that that he wouldn't be safe in the establishment, so he took along his son, who in this case was 6'4 and about 250 pounds, just to make sure that the father would be safe. The two arrived at the bar, and the bouncer refused to allow the son, who was 19 years of age, to enter the establishment, even though the father insisted at the time he just wanted to go in and have a chat with the stepdaughter. And rightfully so, the bouncers at that time refused to allow the son to enter the establishment because he was underage. He explained to the bouncer, once he got inside the establishment, he ended up going in without the stepson, that in fact his daughter was underage. And the bouncer explained to him that, in fact, she could entertain under state law and be underage. The constituent I'm talking to about is a high school teacher, and since the incident, he's discovered that his stepdaughter is not the only minor dancing at these strip bars. Two other 18-year-olds who are seniors in high school are dancing at local strip bars legally. In ORS Chapter 471, Section 430, Subsection 3, it provides that except as authorized by rule, quote, unquote, a person must be 21 to be on the premise that serves alcoholic beverages. The rule that supplies the exception is in Oregon Administrative Rules, Chapter 845, Division 6, Subdivision 35, Section 5, and this rule allows minors that are 18 to 20 years of age or 18 to 20 years old to entertain, providing they do not drink and when they're on break that they may not be in the area where alcohol is being served. I don't believe minors should be dancing in a state of nudity, especially in establishments where it is unlawful for most minors to be anyway. I think that's just asking for trouble. This committee may hear during the course of a discussion on this bill that in some instances minors are putting themselves through college by dancing nude in bars. I know my office has been contacted by a couple of establishment owners. I have not been contacted by anybody who's actually going to be affected by this particular piece of legislation, but owners of establishments have contacted me and berated me, saying that they're doing a great public service by allowing these people to dance and how good the money is. I just feel that the law should be amended, and in this case, what our bill does is make sure that there won't be rulemaking authority given to the appropriate agency in order to kind of get around the law. I don't have any problem with people entertaining in the sense of band members being able to go into bars and entertain, but I do think that we run into trouble by allowing this particular form of entertainment.
Questions of Representative Dick? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Gloria has a question. I simply am here to...
Did you have a question?
I didn't.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You are, in fact, specifically singling out nude dancing as opposed to other dancing or dancing in other conditions.
Yes, just dancing in what is defined as a state of nudity, which I think is both total nudity and topless dancing.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to kind of ask a question maybe of the chair, and that is I'm aware of at least one, if not a whole multitude of bills that in fact, just would outlaw establishments having new dancing or
Well, that's true, but this bill is a little bit of a different genre. This is predicated on the idea of control of minors, I believe. And the law gives you a lot more leeway on the control of minors. And I, Lord knows, I don't want to talk constitutionality in here today. But I don't think there's a lot of constitutional objection to this. I may be wrong, Representative Farr.
No, I think what Representative Cleary is talking about is right. The proposals that are flying around would be proposed constitutional amendments that would allow either the legislature or cities and counties
to
regulate or prohibit nude dancing. This, as I understand it, goes to a different issue, and that's, as you mentioned, the minors issue.
Exactly.
And it goes at the people who hire these folks and those folks themselves. I do have a question when you get to me.
Well, if I might, Representative, and I know the question wasn't addressed to me. I'm a co-sponsor on at least one of those pieces of legislation, and I don't have any problem with us constitutionally giving local entities the ability to regulate those establishments. In the meantime, and let's say a county decides that it's in their best interest not to regulate them or impose restrictions that don't allow them, I don't want minors, high school seniors in particular, to be in a position to be able to go out and entertain people in this way and make money. I mean, I may differ with some members of the committee. I think we have a difficult time legislating morality. We can certainly regulate who is going to get involved in these kinds of activities. So my purpose is, like Representative Mason talked about, is the minor aspects. I have no problem with the constitutional amendment giving local entities the authority to regulate these establishments. And I know there have been instances where there have been trouble, where you have these establishments next to schools, I think, in one instance, and they can't do anything about it.
Right. Just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair, the cases, the Oregon cases, striking down the regulation of the dancing stuff are all come under Oregon's free speech clause. And I think it's important to note for the record that the purpose of this bill, as I understand it from the sponsors, is not to get at that speech issue, but to get at the age issue. A rational purpose for doing that, it's that line from 21 on down. That'd be a fair statement there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that would be a correct statement of our intent, and I think that's all this bill does. And I would concur that in order to make the other changes that are suggested in the Assembly, you do indeed need to affect the Oregon Constitution.
Representative Nunes.
The bill talks about accepting compensation for the kind of activity that you're desiring to. If someone was to do that for free, would this bill take care of that?
Go ahead, Mr. Dixon.
Well, I'm not certain it does as it's written, and I would have to ask counsel about that, but I can't imagine a circumstance where someone would do it for free.
Mr. Chair.
In a bar?
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
I mean,
yeah. No.
Representative Farr.
There are at least two of these facilities in my district, and there have been some news articles about them. And from those articles, it's my understanding what happens is the tips are pretty generous. The actual compensation from the establishment is probably next to nothing. Tips from the patrons are where these folks are making their money. And so, if Representative Minnis raises a good issue there, if you're trying to get at the person who's hiring these people.
I think if I'm not, and I may be wrong about this, but I think as I read the law, in order to allow someone underage into one of these establishments, you have to hire them.
You're probably right.
They're not supposed to be in there for free. In other words, you run into the situation with the 19-year-old at the door being carded. In other words, you have to compensate them or hire them to do this.
Chairman, Representative, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think the direction that you're going really has to deal with establishments that serve alcohol. There's at least one establishment in the city of Portland by the name of Club Macombo or Combo or something like that. I don't know. They don't serve alcohol. Because they don't serve alcohol, they circumvent some of the OLCC rules, and these little ladies can dance on your table nude. Whereas if they're in an establishment where they did serve alcohol, there has to be a bar restraining the person dancing from the person who's viewing the activity. So I guess what I'm saying is I think we need to clarify some of the issues about whether we're talking about establishments that are serving alcohol regulated by OLCC, or if we're just an outright ban on someone under the age of 21 dancing nude in any public establishment.
This bill doesn't deal with, we tried to address that question with the legislation. It doesn't say anything about alcohol. You can't dance in a state of nudity or be hired to dance in a state of nudity in an establishment that serves alcohol or an establishment that doesn't serve alcohol. That's not...
To the prohibition.
I'm sorry?
Where is the prohibition in the statute now?
This bill addresses ORS 167.060 and 167.095, as opposed to the chapter that I cited earlier, which is 471.430, which I think is what where it says except as authorized by rule, and it gets into a discussion of when you can serve alcohol and who can be around when you do serve alcohol. So the two chapters, the first and section one of the bill, are different than ORS 471, section 430.
Just Mr. Chairman, again, which statute specifically prohibits someone in an alcohol or from doing it at all? Am I confused?
Well,
I'm confused.
It may not be the first time I've confused you, Representative.
That's all right.
I'd like to move on. I mean,
I'd like to understand it myself.
We may return to this bill. I mean, we don't even have a quorum, so it's obvious that we're not.
My understanding in ORS chapter 471, section 430, subsection 3, it provides that, quote, except as authorized by rule, a person must be 21 on the premise that serves alcoholic beverages. The rule that supplies the exception is in Oregon Administrative Rules, chapter 845, division 6, subdivision 35, Section 5, and this rule allows minors that are 18 to 20 years old to entertain, providing they do not drink, and when they are on break, they may not be in an area where they are serving alcohol. Our bill doesn't address that, the rule part of it, or alcoholic beverages. Our bill in Section 1 says Sections 2 and 3 of this Act are added to and made a part of ORS 167.060 to 167.095, and it simply says, no matter what agency has rulemaking authority, no one under 21 shall dance in a state of nudity in any establishment for compensation. Doesn't matter if you're serving alcoholic beverages or not. So it gets to the question that you posed about a bar in Portland that doesn't, or a juice bar that doesn't serve alcohol.
It would be a juice bar.
Or a coffee house, yeah. Exactly.
Good.
That's the intent.
I was simply going to conclude the same thing, that this does not make any reference to the an establishment of any kind, just simply creates the crime.
Actually, it's a relatively cut and dried issue whether or not you want to prohibit this type of conduct between 18 and 21. I assume under 18, we're covered under other statutes under 18, I believe.
Sure, it'll be interesting to look at State versus Henry and see what the court, how they drew the line between 18 and 21 in terms of adult versus minor offenses.
Mm-hmm. Further question? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleasure. I don't believe I have anybody else signed up on 2495. Anybody on 2495? Okay. Why don't we close the hearing on 2495 and move over to 2430. This is a bill that makes illegal drug traffickers. Guilty of murder when drug results in death. Signed up today, we have Representative Burton and Representative Senator Phillips has returned as if by magic. Representative Burton, who would you like also to?
I'd like to ask Bradley and Jim McIntyre to join us.
Don Bradley and Jim McIntyre and Representative Burton. Very high powered group here.
As long as they couldn't get a quorum in revenue, I thought I'd come up here and be productive.
Committee with a quorum.
I wish we could kind of fold you back in here for a few moments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Mike Burton, State Representative, District 17, and I'll ask my cohorts here to introduce themselves for the record as they go through. But we will, Mr. McIntyre, who was from the District Attorney's Office in Multnomah County, will be proposing some potential amendments that we'll bring back in. But let me just briefly overview on the bill itself. House Bill 2430 is a bill that, in essence, was passed by the House of Representatives in the 1987 session. This same measure was before us. I don't recall the bill number on it. It did not pass muster in the Senate, however, but was passed by this chamber last session. And the reasons for the bill remain the same as they were in 1987. We have, basically, this is what I call the long-range hammer. It allows the prosecutors to sort of chase up the drug chain, if you would, to try to find those individuals who are really the main distributors of a lot of the drugs in our society today. It also gives the district attorneys the option of chasing a felony murder for these issues, which allows more resources to be put on in those cases where they think it's necessary. The kinds of problems that we have with drugs in our society today, I don't think I need to iterate it to all of you here, but we have in a package of bills that Senator Phillips and I have co-sponsored on behalf of Citizens for Drug-Free Oregon a number of measures. This is one of those, and they should be taken in some sense collectively to try to deal with some of the drug problems that we're faced with today. And our package includes both a juvenile diversion plan and an educational component. This one is part of the law enforcement aspect, and it's a tool we feel that the prosecutor ought to have available to them for the kinds of problems that we're dealing with on distribution and dealership. In Multnomah County last year, there was over 300 babies born who were drug addicted when they at birth. We had an increase in deaths due to overdoses from drugs in our state last year. I think it was an increase of over 100% practically from the previous year in certain categories. The devastation that's bringing to our society and the fact that we haven't really come to grips with that must be addressed at both ends of the scale, both in the supply and the demand end of it, and this is a measure that we feel would be useful on dealing with some of to get at the real essence of some of the people who are supplying drugs in the drug chain, and will allow a more definitive look at it. I would like you to note that felony murder is not aggravated murder. I think you all know that. This is not a death penalty measure. This is a seven-level crime category, and so that, I think probably Mr. McIntyre could explain why we did it that way, but it essentially allows a greater latitude of prosecution in this case than it would if we were under the other.
I was almost a little reluctant that you pointed it out to this committee, but that's...
Well, you know, I sat on this committee, and there's at least two members of this committee who are not attorneys, and some of us who would prefer to remain clearly not attorneys in this function. So the fact is three of you here. You're outnumbered, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, around the table. But at that, I'm going to stop because I do have a quorum in Ways and Means, and I've got to go down there and vote on the Department of Education's budget. So I'm going to leave unless there's questions specific at me. I think two gentlemen I'm going to leave the table are fully capable of answering any questions, and we'll do so.
Any Thank questions for Representative Burton before he goes down? That's good thing.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Paul Phillips, State Senator, District 4, which is in Washington County. Mike briefly went over the bill. Let me just expand on it just slightly. As Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon developed its agenda, it's important to note that it is an agenda. This is one part of a comprehensive package. The testimony that you'll hear on the technical side today will expand it to make it an even better bill. When we took this package around the state, this is one issue that the public could seize, could understand, and could agree with. The closing point that Mike made about this not being a death penalty, a lot of questions as to why not.
That's
but,
my point.
Yeah, it's an issue that you can choose to wrestle with or not. I believe, frankly, the bill as it stands right now is a good tool, that is a practical tool, that can be improved upon by your due deliberation, and I would congratulate you for the expeditious handling of previous bills and would encourage you to deal with this in a similar fashion. I think that message is clear enough, and with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions that you may have. If you don't, I'll turn it over to the technical people, and I'll go back to revenue and deal with the mundane issues of school finance.
It's interesting that half the committee are co-sponsors of this bill. residents.
Yeah, and not only that, on the Citizens for Drug-Free Oregon, those two bills are exactly the same, and the support is strong on both. So the committee has made a strong statement. You can improve the bill and move it on. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Let me ask you about the Senate, the other place. Senate Bill 457, where is that in that swirl of ether over there?
In the morass of... it is, I'm sure, going to receive due deliberation in Senator Cohen's committee and judiciary. She's made every indication that she will take these as they come. The entire package of approximately 15 bills was introduced over there, duplicating a lot of the bills that you've already dealt with. I'm sure that the Senate sees your handling of those and is anxious to deal with them as they come through in a package. So, but I can't speak for Senator Cohen or her committee, but I'm sure she'll deal with them in due process.
Any questions, Senator Phillips?
Thank you very much.
Mr. McIntyre.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is James McIntyre, and I'm the Deputy District Attorney of Multnomah County. I have am currently the attorney in charge of the Violent Crimes Unit within the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I've done that for about the past year and a half. Prior to that, I was the head of the Narcotics Unit for about 2 years. I've had a chance to review the bill, and there are actually, as I read the bill and the amendments that are being suggested to it, there are three sections of the bill, two related, one that appears on its face to be unrelated, but it's really not, and I'll go over that with you. Item J, delivery of a controlled substance as defined, K, assault in the first degree, and then CA, dealing with the introduction of a controlled substance and making these offenses felony murder, that is that the dealers would be held responsible for the deaths of the users.
I just stop you for a moment.
Sure.
Sound terribly professorial here for a minute. For Representative Bryan, Representative Clore, the term felony murder, I think you're probably familiar with it. But for Representative Clore, that's a term of art in the law, and it basically is an old concept. Whenever a person dies during the commission of felony, it then bootstraps it up into the highest level of homicide. And so every time you hear the term felony murder, realize that you're talking about a vast and existing body of law, and it's not in the least bit strange. In fact, how far does it go back?
It springs from the common law.
People tend to bandy about the term felony murder, assuming that everybody knows what they're talking about. And for your information, now
as you can
talk to the exam.
Well, that's why there's a specific list of enumerated felonies that precede the amendments that are being proposed. That's where it springs from, the term felony murder. In reviewing the bill, there are a couple on its face. There are a couple of suggestions that I would make to the committee as to amendments. There were, in item J, right now we have enumerated delivery of a controlled substance without definition as to schedule. Now, as the Oregon statutes are in place, different drugs are contained within different what are called drug schedules. Yes. The schedules are established by the Food and Drug Administration, and we adopt the federal schedules within Oregon. I have heard some questions or comments that perhaps we should say just Schedule 1, or perhaps we should say Schedule 1 and Schedule 2, excluding marijuana. And I would urge the committee to adopt part of this, and that is that you should say delivery of a controlled substance in Schedules 1 and 2. That would cover heroin, LSD, cocaine, and of course the commonly referred to and highly potent crack. That would also cover methamphetamine. For our purposes, and speaking for Mr. Schrunk at the District Attorney's Office in Multnomah County, the ones that I specifically talked about are the drugs that we are seeing most commonly and causing the greatest trouble. But I am not advocating that you exclude marijuana. And the reason that I'm not doing that is because marijuana has become a large growth industry within the state of Oregon. And as part and parcel of that, I think that you should change item J to say not only delivery, but you should include the crime of manufacturing a controlled substance. Because manufacturing of a controlled substance is growing marijuana. It is also manufacturing methamphetamine. And legally and arguably, it could also be producing crack cocaine from the cocaine base, the cocaine powder. That would also be the manufacturing. And the reason for that is because of the fact that law enforcement is time and time again running up against people involved in the distribution and manufacturing of controlled substances who are heavily armed, are more than willing to have firearms and automatic weapons to protect their enterprises. Not only are the law enforcement people running up against that, but the users themselves are running into drug dealers and drug manufacturers who are involved in the use of firearms and heavy weapons. Heavy weapons that would shock the conscience of most people from 10 or 15 years ago. I think that anyone who is engaged in the manufacturing of a controlled substance in Schedule 1 or 2, or the delivery of a controlled substance in Schedule 1 or 2, and while they are attempting to do that or while they are doing that, they cause the death of another person, or someone is acting as their accomplice causes the death of another person, that should be handled as a felony murder.
Chair?
Representative Clark.
Can I end up with a question right here?
Certainly.
As I hear what you're saying on the manufacturer, you're talking about, you're not talking about what I'll call a products liability approach. And why not? I mean, why can't, if I manufacture the stuff, you can find that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we limit it to situations where I pick up a submachine gun, kill someone who's coming into my manufacturing spot?
As I follow your reasoning, that we could cover that in the with some appropriate amendments in the second in paragraph B, which would deal with the distribution. As I follow your reasoning, Representative
right.
Clark, if you want to continue on up the ladder, as it
sure.
were, to the manufacturer, and I'm in complete agreement with that.
Product liability approach.
Right. I'm in complete agreement with that. Really, what I'm addressing here, and the reason I became concerned in reading the bill, is we have, if the committee's not aware of it, and the public certainly should be aware of it. I know of United States Forest Service personnel who have gone into wild grow operations and come across booby-trapped hand grenades that were set there to protect the grow operations. We have had underground grow operations that were protected by electronic surveillance and cameras and videos. In Portland, we have crack houses and rock cocaine houses that are protected with automatic weapons and shotguns. And those people should not be able to engage in this kind of a felony offense. And then if, for instance, someone, not even law enforcement, happens to get involved with them and they end up killing them, they should not have the protection. They should not be able to not be pursued as a felony murderer. And that's why I would propose the first set of amendments there in item J. As to, I want to skip down for a second into the body of the bill that deals with introduction of a controlled substance by any means. Again, I think you should delineate that and put it in Schedules 1 and 2. That would bring it more in conformity with your other felony drug offenses. And then paragraph B, as used in this paragraph, you define delivery to the decedent by the defendant. I think that the word defendant should be stricken and the word distributor would be a more appropriate word placed into the bill. Distributor could then be defined as simply as possible, that is one that distributes. And we wouldn't your statutory language could, in fact, by using the word defendant, cause us, from my perspective as a trial lawyer, some problems at proof and trial. That is, who is a defendant legally? That's a term of art. I think that these amendments are necessary. I think that they are necessary in the continuing pursuit. We spent a lot of time talking about people, where our focus is going to be the dealers. Our focus is going to be the people delivering. Well, I think it's the time that the dealers, the manufacturers, and the distributors realize that not only are they going to be held account for their illegal conduct in the distribution of narcotics, but the end effect, that is, if drugs kill people and you're going to sell something that kills people, then you're going to be held accountable for murder. And that's all that we're trying, that all that I can see the intent of this bill. As to the second portion of this bill, actually I should say the third portion, which I said appears to be a little bit unrelated, I don't want to take away from the importance of item number K, assault in the first degree. It's easy, but even just by its simple placement, I know psychologically it's easy to lose this element of the bill in the reading of it. And I think that is an extremely important amendment to the felony murder statutes in Oregon. I have tried at least two very serious murder cases that involved a defendant who was involved in the racial killing of the victim. And I say that because I know that there have been other bills addressed that want to make to raise that to the aggravated murder statutes. I want to show you an example, though, of what happens without having assault in the first degree, and here is a felony murder. Around May of 1985, a young man by the name of Jap Van Dang was in a telephone booth at 72nd and Killingsworth in Portland, Oregon. He stayed in the phone booth too long for a man by the name of Gary Lester Peterson. Gary Lester Peterson did not like people who were of Asian descent. That we found out later on, actually. He attacked Mr. Jap Van Dang in the phone booth and stabbed him three times, stabbed him once in the neck. When the case was brought to trial, he was indicted for murder. He was tried on a murder count. During the trial, his defense became, I did not intend to kill Mr. Van Dang. I only intended to stab him. There was no jury instruction in place, because it was not the law, that if you intend to cause somebody serious physical injury, that is, you intend to cause them a substantial risk of death, and a death occurs, you can be held responsible for murder. That did not exist. The only thing that the jury heard was you must specifically intend to kill somebody.
Question, which creates another answer, which creates another question, and it just keeps multiplying and building until finally it just shuts the system down. And I thought that was interesting. I can see how it would happen, and I can see where it would be a flat disaster if it occurred in some computer systems in this country.
Thank you.
I'd like to jump back to the global question I was asking you, because looking at the bill, I'm pretty comfortable with the first part of computer crime, because if you knowingly, this is a beginning at line 27 of page 1, if you knowingly attempt to access or use or attempt to use any computer and so forth for the purpose of devising or executing any scheme or artifice to defraud, hey, let's hit them with a hammer, obtaining money, property, or services by means of false or fraudulent pretenses, representations, or promises, the hammer again, let's do it, committing theft, the hammer again. Also, subsection 3 on page 2, if you knowingly and without authorization, you're altering, damaging, or destroying computer data, hey, the hammer again. It's subsection 4 that I wonder about. Knowingly and without authorization, uses, accesses, or attempts to access any computer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, commits computer crime. And then we say that all of these are a Class C felony. It seems to me that when you're getting back to the burglary situation, up to that point, we're okay, because there's some intent to commit some kind of illegal act or certainly nasty act that we ought to make illegal. Number 4, if I'm a college student and I knowingly and without authorization walk over to another student's computer and play with it, I've just committed a Class C felony. Do I misread this?
I can't answer the question as to whether or not you're misreading it.
Number 4, it seems to be setting out a separate one. I'm real nervous about that because, you know, I may just want to see how the program works.
It could be such a thing, Representative Mannix, that there should be an additional classification built here for to separate out the instances that you're describing and keep them as a misdemeanor. However, subsection 4 is the language that talks about hacking when there's no monetary gain derived therefrom. And that is exactly what we're concerned about. That's the case of the person inserting the virus into the system. That's the case of the person manipulating our credit information.
No, 3, I think, is the virus, because that person is knowingly and without authorization altering, damaging, or destroying the computer and so forth. I'm comfortable saying that's a Class C felony. 4 is the person who knowingly and without authorization uses, accesses, or attempts to access. It doesn't talk about changing, damaging. It just says using. Now, granted, in a way, using is theft.
Representative Mannix, you could literally have her stand down, go back to the operating system, somebody walk over there and type directory, hit return, you've accessed the system. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you're talking about. Representative Gloria, you're...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my concern is differentiating simply accessing
from fooling around with, taking from, and so forth. Just out of concern that otherwise we've been a bit overbroad here with the hammer on number four.
The legal minds in our industry
all told me, lawyers, of course.
And I believe the legal minds in our industry, and I believe you, Representative Mannix, but they have told me that subsection four is the subsection that deals with computer hacking as we are concerned with it. Now, it may also deal with the college prankster as well. I am not going to deny that. But at the same time, it does deal with the person who is hacking our database or the state of Oregon's database or anybody else's database. And that is what gives us cause for concern. Simple theft of service of $500 being a felony at this point is, I say once again, is not nearly as severe as manipulating our database.
Couldn't we say,
Mr. Representative Mannix, you might even look at the definition of computer, and really the definition of computer could include a calculator.
Couldn't we add a phrase here, with intent to commit any illegal act? Then I'd feel a lot more comfortable with four.
I would not
any illegal act, it doesn't even say it has to be a crime, it has to be an illegal act. You could just put that phrase in line 7, before commits computer crime, with intent to commit any illegal act. Then you've got to show some intent to have done something other than just, gee, I want to check the directory over here.
Well, one of the problems that has been pointed out to me, and I can't cite you a specific example of it occurring, but our security people evidently have dealt with it, is the person who does get into the database does not do anything to manipulate it, but extracts information, for example, non-published numbers, once again, and then does not sell that information, but gives it away for favors. They specifically cited giving it away in exchange for drugs.
What if we, may
and
I?
That,
yeah, let me go on.
What if we accepted or exempted from coverage the simple act of walking up to someone else's computer equipment and making use of it? See, hacking to me always connoted you had to use some, you know, surreptitious means of getting into the computer. I walk over to that terminal in front of everybody, and under this act, of course, I'm, I guess, an employee of the state, so I have authorization. You walk over to that computer and do something on it, and you've just violated this law. But you're not doing it surreptitiously. You're not doing it by telephone modem or whatever. That's my one concern.
Well, I think it's a good bill. I think he has a point, because as I read it, I see not only the thing of you punching in directory in somebody else's computer, but as I look at how broad computer is, computer means that it's not limited to any electronic device that performs logical, arithmetic, or memory functions by the manipulation of electronic or magnetic impulses. That could be hitting a button on someone's digital watch.
Couldn't we say it shall be presumed that anybody who accesses a computer system surreptitiously has an intent to commit an illegal act? Then you've got a presumption there, and you've got your illegal act. They've done it surreptitiously. They can overcome that presumption by showing it was totally innocent.
I think there's a legitimate bill, and these are legitimate concerns. Part of the problem is that computer goes all the way from your digital watch, which is a computer, all the way up to your mega-billion-dollar mainframes. And that's not all systems, but I think it's a good bill, and it's a legitimate concern. I think what he talked about may need to be addressed.
May I run that language by you and see what you think about it? It shall be, first of all, you'd say, with intent to commit any illegal act, commits computer crime. Then another sentence, it says, it shall be presumed for purposes of this subsection 4 only, so they don't try to put it in somewhere else, that any surreptitious, people can look it up in the dictionary, accessing of computer equipment is with an intent to commit an illegal act. It's a rebuttable presumption. Shall be a rebuttable presumption.
I thought we
learned earlier that the assumptions were frowned on.
Oh, but that's only from the common law. If you put it into the code, then we're okay. We just can't grandfather in the common law as rebuttable presumption.
Well, we're going to work on this a little bit here.
Well, I'd be happy to help in any way I can, Mr. Chairman. And so would our security people, and so would our legal folks. So we're at your service.
Kind of computer wrestling here. Computer game.
Generally, I think it's a good bill.
It's a good bill. I think, you know, you've got to, you know, and I mean, the idea of somebody putting a virus into a mainframe could be, I was very, very frank. I don't want anyone messing around with my little PC down my office.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, you really want to get down to it and start playing around with my database, not like yours, but little database.
Maybe.
Any further questions, Mr. Wilhelm? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Why don't we close the hearing on 2518 and go back to the top here.
Everything you're doing.
We're improving.
No, you are.
That's a lousy section. And someday some prosecutor will jump on somebody just for the hell of it.
Probably going to get Web 25.
Why is it okay to use somebody's computer, but it's not okay to use your car?
Right now, under that section, you've got a calculator sitting here and you step away and I want to have to
know. No, don't steal my calculator. Any more than you don't steal my car, or you don't steal anything else that I want.
No, he asked.
Why is it okay?
I don't understand.
Well, normally, there's certain assumptions.
If you guys want to fight that battle, let me know.
I don't make any assumptions. Tom doesn't. Tom doesn't make any assumptions. Right. I sure don't make any assumptions.
Okay, why don't we go into work session on 24:30. What's the committee's desire in this bill? Is there a desire on the part of the committee to pursue this bill? This is the...
I desire to pursue the bill.
Good. Okay, so the committee... The chief sponsor desires to pursue
it.
You faded out on some of your other...
Pursue this bill. Proposed amendments. First of all, there was the proposed amendment that on line 23... we had, and I don't have specific language here, but basically he wanted us to, Mr. McIntyre, why don't you come up and sit in on this? And you can even bring your sidekick, Mr. Bradley, if you want. He's kind of a
historian.
He doesn't want to come?
De facto part of the committee now. He's shy.
What's wrong with him?
He was assigned to the Senate last time.
He was.
It's maybe your only chance. Well, I better be still.
Okay, there was a suggestion that we add Schedule 1 and 2 on line 23.
Well, that we add, I'm sorry, Mr.
McIntyre, go ahead.
At line 23, you add manufacture and delivery of a controlled
That's
substance
correct.
In Schedules 1 or 2.
Is it as defined or as found in Schedules 1 and 2?
It would, as found in Schedules 1 or 2.
Now, we've used the term Schedule 1 or 2. Is that properly defined somewhere else? I mean, we all know what it means, but...
It is properly defined within the relevant statutes under ORS 475, and I believe it's 991 or 990, the enabling statutes of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act.
Well, if we need to reference that specifically, we'll give counsel editorial discretion to do that. And I believe there's probably some other language you could track with that somewhere, and makes reference to Schedule 1 and 2 and some other statutes.
I think the Board of Pharmacy keep a record, too? I do believe they schedule for different drugs.
Okay. At least did last time we looked.
Whether they exist or not right now, we're not sure.
They're listed in there specifically.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Representative Brian.
Mr. Chairman. They're listed in there quite specifically in that length.
Okay. What's the committee's reaction to that proposed amendment? The proposed amendment, and the chair will move it, would be that the language we read something to the effect on line 23 of manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance as found in Schedules 1 and 2, and then the appropriate reference, if needed, to schedule, that's to a reference to Schedule 1 or 2. Now, is the committee comfortable with that? Again, as the witness said at a prior time, this would include LSD, cocaine, crack, methamphetamine, heroin,
And would include the manufacturing growing of marijuana.
Yes, it would.
Good. And I also assume, I sound like some type of cornucopia here, PCB, angel dust.
It would also include, as we have, the statutes are now in place, it would include the substances you've just mentioned, Mr. Chairman, are in Schedule 1. This would also, by putting it, bringing in Schedule 2, you would be bringing in line precursor substances to the manufacture of methamphetamine, and you would also be bringing into line the substances that are analogs and other derivatives.
Is Ritalin in there too?
Ritalin would be in Schedule 2.
Okay. Representative Manning.
I have a little problem with just saying Schedules 1 and 2 without tying in 475992 and 475995, because 475992 is the statute which specifically allows legal activity in drugs. And if you just say Schedules 1 and 2, I can just see somebody arguing someday that legal activity in manufacture or delivery of drugs combined with some other innocent illegal activity, which you'd have to find not relating to it but somehow combined to it, ends up getting into this category. Somebody who is legally manufacturing drugs but say in the course of that legal manufacture does something illegal about how they do it. I'll skip a step, or I'm just thinking out loud here since this is work session. I don't know. It seems to me that you've got to have a homicide connection anyway.
First of all, we're assuming that there's going to be a death occurring.
Right.
And also within, as I understood the chair, the language to be modified would be Schedules 1 and 2 as defined. We would want it to cover where Schedules 1 and 2 are defined and then include the following language also dealing with the ORS 475992.
And as proscribed by, something like that.
Yes, I think that's where I was trying to go to.
Okay, if we can grandfather all that in, that would do the trick.
We could perhaps, Mr. Bradley had a good point, we could...
You might want to use the word unlawful.
Preface it with unlawful. Although unlawful is, unlawful is contained within the statute, right. 475.
I still like or as prescribed and as prescribed by. So you've got to have had the illegal manufacture or the illegal delivery. And you also are limiting to the schedules 1 and 2, then you're stuck. Then they're stuck.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Minnick. I have a question with reference to. I have a physician, someone with script writing authority, killed someone with script writing authority. All that you could prove homicide, in other words, they intend to kill the person. By the amendments that you're, and you could prove intent, case, would you be precluding yourself from prosecuting? Those kind of privileges and amendments that you're talking about.
Well, you'd have intentional murder anyway.
Isn't there a poison provision too?
Well, we would go to the most specific criminal statute to pursue the prosecution anyway, which would be the intentional murder statute under that scenario. This wouldn't be drafted to exclude the prosecution under those circumstances.
If you left in the assault one, if the doctor just really wanted to hurt the patient, I mean, you know, maybe send the patient into a coma, that would also be covered in by the other provision.
I think so.
Provide some loophole for
no holes in the net.
No holes in the net.
I don't know. Thinking out loud.
Further discussion of the amendment, somewhat conceptual amendment, I think. Any objection to the amendment? Now, you had other concerns. There was something we should discuss, is line 24, whether or not the assault in first degree is defined ORS 163-185 will be included. I have no personal objection to that inclusion, but I think we should discuss it. Anybody, are you comfortable with that? It's in, so it takes no amendment to bring it in.
I'm surprised it was ever excluded, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so it stays in. What was your third point, Mr. McIntyre?
Mr. Chair, if I could back up for a second, there was one scenario on the assault one that I did not talk about, which I think should be addressed if the committee wants to.
Go ahead, please.
It gets involved in these discussions later on. You know, the instances where there are two individuals who jointly decide to go out and commit a felonious assault, and one person acts as the principal, the other person acts as the accomplice, and where they are intending to cause serious physical injury, a stabbing or a shooting, whatever, or running over somebody with a car, for that matter, they will, under current Oregon law,
they would have a defense to intentional murder and would only be convicted again of manslaughter in the first degree, and that's another reason to keep that assault in the first degree as a felony murder offense in there, because the accomplice could come in and say, I never, even though, yeah, maybe the principal meant to kill the guy, I only intended to help him try to assault him, so it was only reckless conduct on my part.
But so you're arguing in favor of the present language?
Yes.
Leave it in. Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Courtney.
Have we resolved the concern maybe about defendant?
You got the crib sheet there?
The
I haven't got to that part yet, that's
you want to take it up now?
Well, I'm trying to clarify. I'm trying to come to closure on line 24, then we'll move on.
Okay, go ahead.
Are we all right in line 24? Okay, now, Representative Courtney.
What is this? There's concern that maybe the defendant is too narrow. It only applies to the ultimate supplier as set out in lines 26, 7, and 9.
Yes, Representative Courtney. That was it was my recommendation to the committee that we remove or delete the word defendant and insert the word distributor, because the in fact the word defendant is a legal term of art, and there could pose some confusion, and actually I can foresee at least some proof problems as far as establishing a person as a defendant versus as a distributor. When we're trying, well, as I understood the intent of the bill, we are trying to go as far up the chain of distribution or manufacturing as we can. Representative Clark brought out during the hearing, do we want to include manufacturing as well? That is, if a person manufactures and distributes, can we go all the way back up to the manufacturer in this type of a situation? So while we were talking about deleting defendant.
Your point, Matt. Just,
may I be allowed to add?
Let me, Representative Courtney, let me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want your opinion on how far back you want to reach in terms of a that we can pass it out, but is it going to be workable from a prosecutor standpoint?
It would be workable from a it's like every other case. It's workable from a prosecutor standpoint if I have the evidence and the witnesses to go forward with it. And if I were able to find the evidence and the witnesses who would support my proceeding against the first level dealer and the second level dealer and the third level dealer until we're all the way up to the chain, it would be workable.
All right. Then, as I understand it, the term distributor is defined as a person who delivers. Is that correct?
I believe a distributor would be a person, well, they would be a more proper definition is a person who distributes, and we would go to the...
Well, I understand my reference is it's defined in 475.005 subsection 12 as a person who delivers. Is that incorrect? I don't have the statutes in front of me. Do you know if that's correct?
That sounds correct to me, although I don't have the statutes in front of me.
Right. Let's say that's correct.
Distributor means a person who delivers. It's in the statute.
Okay.
Or do we have a definition of distributor?
Can I ask the next?
The statute? Go ahead.
Yeah, we just decided we did, Mr. Chair. I want to ask now the question. Given that definition is in the statute, does that definition, can that reach manufacturer?
No.
And I don't, in other words, say the words, how do you reach manufacturer with that definition, which already exists in the statute, even since we seem to be, you're recommending we go to the term distributor.
And how do we reach manufacturer?
Yeah, you're going to have to add something else, or distributor does it with its present definition.
I don't believe the distributor would do it with its present definition.
Can you say distributor or manufacturer?
Or manufacturer.
Pause here for a second. Just pause for a second. Representative Mannix, you got it in front of you, and he has it in front of you. Why don't you read it?
Deliver or delivery means the actual, constructed, or attempted transfer other than by administering or dispensing, which are legal, from one person to another of a controlled substance, whether or not there is an agency relationship. Dispenser means a practitioner who dispenses. Distributor means a person who delivers. So if you say distributor here, you mean a person who delivers. If you mean a person who delivers, you mean actual, constructed, or attempted transfer from one person to another of a controlled substance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean you're moving down up the chain? I'm not
we
so sure.
We want to go up the chain. So
yeah, Representative
Courtney
has raised a very legitimate concern about that.
We are going to go up the chain in that there are different levels of deliverers within the system. There are ultimately, and one example is that, and unfortunately, it's a sad example, I know certainly in Multnomah County,
We literally have a closed system in some areas. In the area of methamphetamine, we have a closed system. We have local methamphetamine manufacturers who distribute their product to a very select few of local methamphetamine dealers who then cut it and produce it out about two or three times. In that situation, if we included manufacturer in this and they were to sell to someone who ultimately died, we could go completely up that chain all the way into the manufacturer, and I think that's what we should do.
I'm a little disturbed in the language here. We're talking definitions now, ORS 47505 sub 8, where it says delivery means the actual destructive or attempted transfer by other than administering or dispensing one person to or constructive by one person to the other. I'm just disturbed by that actual destructive or attempted. It seems to be relatively narrow.
I think I can help you with that, Mr. Chair. That has a broad definition. About 3 years ago in Multnomah County, we started prosecuting cases based upon an attempted transfer theory. And the attempted transfer theory was founded upon the belief that we could establish certain circumstantial evidence to prove that someone was about to transfer the controlled substances. That issue has gone before the Court of Appeals and it has already been affirmed. So actual is merely one part of the statute. Actual, constructive, or attempted is now a very broad reading, and if we can prove circumstantially that the defendant is set up to deal, then that's enough for the delivery.
Representative Manning.
I think the real answer, and actually Representative Minnis just whispered the answer to me. I mean, I'm taking credit for his point, but the real answer is your sub B. We've been talking about sub A without paying attention to sub B, which is a limiting special definition for that paragraph only. If we use distributor, we can say, as used in this paragraph, delivery to the decedent by the distributor includes the actual or constructive transfer by the distributor in violation and then of the drug statutes at any point in the supply process. So by definition, we have expanded distributor for this paragraph only. And that would answer, I think, Representative Cordy's concern. If we use distributor all the way through there, we've bumped it up. But we're making it clear that we're not using the overall definition of delivery or distributor.
President Cordy.
There is a definition for manufacturer.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
475.
If you throw in the word manufacturer.
There you go.
14. You then are going to let the definition of manufacturer stand as support by manufacturer, correct?
Correct. That would be where the courts would have to look for the statutory analysis.
Because at first I was concerned that you were saying distributor / manufacturer. Bind distributor. But you haven't defined manufacturer, but you're saying that's sufficient definition in statutes to pick up that term, too.
Yes, sir. And if the committee is a concern about that, we could add language, I believe, at the end of paragraph B that could pull manufacturing as defined in, or add another paragraph, manufacturer is defined as, or is defined from, or else.
Representative Manning.
I'm sorry. I raised my hand.
Manufacturing is defined in the same reference that Representative Mannix was quoting from. It's just further down the right column of the first page.
If we want to include manufacturers, we could just use the word manufacturer. We don't have to redefine it. We could say it results from the introduction of a controlled substance by any means into the body of the decedent when the controlled substance is manufactured or delivered to the decedent by the
right.
distributor.
Correct.
Let's put it right
that
there.
That would work real well.
And then in the next paragraph, we'll define delivered.
Or would you want to say manufactured, delivered, or distributed?
No, because if you say manufactured or delivered to the decedent, then section that sub B fits in, and you don't have to horse around with that.
And then in B, may I go on with
it? Yes, certainly.
In B, there's a technical change. Delivery is not the word we used in the prior paragraph. As used in this paragraph, and it says delivery, well, we just said delivered, not delivery. We could take the quote and put it in front of two. As used in this paragraph, delivery, quote, to the decedent by the distributor, unquote. Or we could say that
Somehow I want to make it clear we're talking about delivered. And someone's going to argue in some criminal trial somewhere that there's a difference between delivered and delivered. I just see it happening. I want to avoid it right now.
Can't you just use the word delivered?
Delivered to the decedent by the distributor.
Right.
There you go. Instead of delivery.
Right, just say...
Includes the actual constructive transfer by the distributor. And we're defining then, and at any point in the supply process, we've just expanded distribution to pump it all the way up the system.
That was in the intent, too.
This obviously needs to be worked on a little bit, unless you've got a specific...
Well, except for that conceptual amendment, for this, I've got specific language I'd like to offer. Is this work session time? Or?
Yes, it is. Why don't you,
I move
for the record, give us the specific language.
I move that we amend line 26 so that it reads, I'll read the whole line, as changed. Body of the decedent, comma, when the controlled substance is manufactured or delivered to the decedent by the distributor. And that runs on to line 26, excuse me, 27. Also that we change line 29 to change the word delivery to read delivered and to change the word defendant to read distributor. That we amend line 30 to change defendant to distributor. And then on page 2, that line 1, defendant, be changed to distributor.
Okay. That's relatively clear.
Objection to the amendment?
You don't need to do that. Representative Miller, you all right, too?
Fine.
Okay.
We had some other concerns here, I believe, on one of the sheets. I don't think there's any. Let me see here. One more.
I don't think there's anything else. Mr. McIntyre, Mr. Brad, is there anything else?
I believe so, sir.
Again, letterorial leeway for staff to clean this up if she finds it necessary. Motions on the bill.
Move it.
Representative Cordy moves House Bill 2430. Full committee do pass recommendation. As amended discussion, Representative Bryan.
Mr. Chairman, just the question that on line 23. The reference to Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 links that into ORS 475, etc. Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 are federal DEA.
That's correct.
Definitions.
But not DEA. It's not DEA. What is it?
The schedule, where do the drugs, they're Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah, they're not. They're Food and Drug Administration.
Right. And I'm wondering if, I just want to make sure, I did not see it, but I'm, of course, not legally trained, but did not see the reference to those in these